This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Suppose something bad happens, like a tsunami or a gas leak, and the alert messaging comes up on TVs and digital signage screens in English text. That's great, except if much of the viewing audience consists of first-generation immigrants who barely speak or read English. It's pretty much the problem right now with public alert systems, and a volunteer organization called the Next Gen Video Information Systems Alliance is trying to fix that. Called NVISA for short, the body has come up with a way to add universal graphic elements to emergency alerts, called Visually Integrated Display Symbology, or VIDS. The system can be adopted across a wide range of communications platforms, notably digital signage. In this podcast, I speak with Alliance member Bill Robertson about the thinking behind these graphical elements. We also get into detail of how digital signage network operators and solutions providers can plug into the system and put it to work. Bill, thank you for joining me. What is the Next Gen Video Information Systems Alliance, and why did you form it?
The NVISA, as we call it, is a group of like-minded kind of initially technology companies that had different pieces of technology that was primarily focused at the upcoming ATSC 3 broadcast standard. We had different elements that we could use or leverage. And many of us that formed NVISA were members of the ATSC, what was referred to as the I-team or implementation team, where we talked about this and helped present some of the elements that are the standards that embodied in ATSC 3. Well, we saw more opportunity in getting together and not just being standards based and focused on those particular things, but how could we leverage this? What could we do together as a group, again, of like-minded individuals to be able to represent these things? And some of it too is not necessarily having to wait until people adopt that new standard, but what could we do today? What could be leveraged with even today's technology? So the initial start was some technology companies, but we've had more other broadcasters and other people have joined the alliance to kind of help modulate what's going on, what and how it could fit, what other things we could do. So it's been a kind of a nice thing about this next gen video thing does not necessarily say that it's got to be the next in this type of standards implementation, but what else could we do to improve the whole idea of information?
Okay. So I was interested in this because I got a press release talking about how your organization had put together a series of recommendations for symbols to use for alerts.
Correct. Yeah. And that was actually our first product in Working Group 1. I was chairman of that particular group. And what we focused on is a recognition that there are things in our in the broadcast groups in North America, primarily United States and Canada, where there are members of the community, you know, emergency managers, FEMA on the United States side, Weather Canada on the in the Canadian side, that issue alert information, and the alerts can go out over radio in audio broadcast, and they can also go over television. People have seen these in the United States. They're usually accompanied with different tones to get your attention, to make sure you understand, hey, this is an alert, this is information. Well, the interesting thing about those is they're represented in a, if it's a television thing, there's an aural component and a visual component. We've got text crawl, we've got audio that's associated with it. Mm. The trick is that those particular things have never been really associated with something that wasn't text that had to be read, or it would might be a full screen display that takes over the primary programming and displays what the event is about. But we see more of a situation where if we could represent those with a graphical element, we could do a couple of more things. Number one, you're not reliant on the being able to read the particular alert, what it is. That mm-hmm. seems a little strange, only in the fact that, well, if English or French may not be your native language, let's say we needed to represent something to a Spanish community, to a Slavic community, whatever it might be, that if we can use symbols that are more generally understood to represent a particular event that's happening at that time, we think that is a better way to help communicate. So it's not just saying you have to have the text and you have to have a crawl representation or you have to have a full screen slate, but many times, and you see this, if you see a lot of other symbols, you know, stop signs have got a standard shape to them and people will know what they mean. Yield signs, things like that, that represent information that can be conveyed without having to do any kind of motion, without having to display anything else. If we can put that symbol up there, we can definitely communicate.
Hmm. There must have been a lot of debate around the symbols.
You know, the symbols there's some interesting things around that. There actually was a good body of work that was already done. So we leveraged a lot of that. And some of these are ISO standards. There's actually an ISO standard on different societal, it's actually referred to as Societal Security Emergency Management Guidelines for Color-Coded Alerts. So in that standard, they represent, okay, here's a color code. And we adopted that into our recommended practice. One thing I should point out, too, is Invisa is not a standards group. We are coming together as a coalition of people, and we're publishing these kinds of work as a recommended practice. So it's an idea that, hey, here's some things that we've put together as a like-minded individuals, and we think has roots not only in this particular part of the industry, but in many, many other things. Again, wherever there's visual displays, and digital signage is the perfect example, hundreds of thousands of these displays all over the place that could take advantage of a similar kind of thing. And by us kind of mapping these things and looking at these symbols and bringing that together, it really helps. So other ones are another ISO standard for graphical symbols for public information. Again, things like most of these, by the way, tie with hazardous waste or, a potential electrocution. You've seen some of these things as you approach a building many times, those mm-hmm. kinds of types of things. But there's another group that's called National Alliance for Public Safety, GIS, goes by the acronym NAPSIG. And they've done quite a bit that goes beyond just like electrical symbols or, gas, chlorine gas, natural gas, those kinds of symbols that you would put up as warnings to the general public. But they've done things to incorporate elements like floods, hurricanes, tornadoes. And so we leveraged a lot of the work that was done and didn't just say, okay, we're going to take this symbol. Now, some of the symbols, I will tell you, are a little complex if you start to squeeze them down onto a small display size, but they do a pretty good job of conveying the information. A tornado looks like a tornado. The symbol is pretty well described. There's other things too, where a flash flood looks like a house with waves. So, there's things going on. What we had to do was they didn't cover a lot of the event codes that are used in public alerting. So we had to kind of either craft a couple of things around it or reference them in a slightly different way. There's things that can be communicated to the public that are just simply information. For example, a school closing would be, an information. It doesn't have to have a sign that might jump at you and scare you into action. But just it's an informational type of thing. Maybe an exclamation mark, or maybe we did a little cloud kind of symbol with an ellipse to say, hey, there's information here and, pay attention to it. One of the important things that we did was just about the symbols, but was also in adapting these ISO standards for people that are colorblind and to reference the symbol with a particular essence of the alert. Is this a really traumatic type of event? For example, a tornado is a pretty substantive, short fuse, quick action type of thing. Life, limb, or property are in potential danger. So we escalated some of these alerts to be represented not only by the symbol, but we added something to the symbol where we did a double underline. And that was, again, to reference this, if I just put up the same symbol, for example, flash flood and flood watch look like the exact same symbol, but by adding a color border around them, we can represent them differently. So red with a double underline says, hey, you know, pay attention. Again, more information to exchange and reference this thing. Hey, this is an important thing. It's red. It's got this. We also looked at, again, the idea of contrast, so that if the font was done in a proper way and it was had a certain speed to it, things like that, but it would be enough contrast so people that had, again, either color blindness, maybe in the red-green spectrum, or other things like that, would still be able to at least read the text or be able to discern the difference, because the double underline is different than a single underline or no underline. And that's, again, the basis of what we did. Yeah, there was some debate. There was a lot of stuff. But I think we centered on some really good, the elements that we came up with really represent what we were trying to go after.
Yeah, I think there are three tiers of alerts. Is that accurate?
We actually have five groups. Oh, and okay. Now that doesn't mean that the symbols change. But group one, which is the, you know, most important ones, for example, I used a tornado warning, something that has a substantive impact. And again, a short fuse, it's a very timely thing. You need to take notice very quickly. In the group one and group two, we use the same symbols. We use the same color background, but we have a unique thing that we said. One of them is an example. If you were to, tune into your TV set and, you happen to be watching while the alert is being sent, the typical scenario is that the alert pops up there. You know, maybe we could put the symbol up there too. The alert scrolls by and then it's over. It's done. You switch back to regular programming. The trick there is that the alert is still active. The alert hasn't gone away. The fact that you're still in a danger situation is still there. It just so happens that it just doesn't show up on the TV screen. So what we've done is set up a situation where the symbol would pop up and then the crawl or the text information would be displayed associated with that. Now, when I talk about a crawl, typically in a television environment, these things, you're familiar with these things, you know, ticker tape crawls going across, that kind of stuff. Again, if that symbol pops up with it, you've got some association. Well, if it goes away, or let's say you tune in after it's already displayed, you don't know you're under an alert. So we have a scenario that says, okay, group one has the symbol and the text displayed together. Group two uses the symbol but no text. The nice thing about that is, for example, you might have a tornado warning for an hour. You're in an active storm cell area. You've got a tornado warning and it's active for an hour. So now I can pop up the thing with the text, say you're under a tornado warning, but then I can leave the symbol on the screen. It's not really blocking a lot of other information. The programming's still up, but I've got persistence in that group two that says I can leave the symbol up for the duration of the alert. Not meaning, you know, that how long the crawl is, but the duration of the alert says, what does the emergency management group say the duration of this event is, and keep it up for that period of time. So we've got...
So it kind of sits sort of like a watermark?
Yeah, exactly. So it's using the same symbol. It's in the same position and everything. And so when the crawl goes away or that information goes away, that symbol can persist. Now, this has deeper meaning in the future where that might be a clickable type of link. So that here's an example. I tune in, say the alert's been already broadcast. The alert, the audio, everything is already gone. I tune in 10 minutes later. Wow, I see the screen. It's got that little icon up there. Oh, I wonder what that's about. I don't have to go search someplace else. It could be a clickable link. So on my smart TV or my display or, you know, whatever device I happen to be viewing this particular content on, I could click on that and it would take me to a page or to an area where I could find out more information about what that event is. What's going on? Do I need to be prepared? What's happening? So that persistence in those really, you know, severe alert things really helps us set a standard, and I say that loosely in a standard body type of thing, but in a way of representing, you know, important information and giving guidance on how it could be used to form a sense of iconography that people could use in the rest of their display technology.
Hmm. So what would happen if this wasn't done? Or I guess really what is, because this is just brand new, what's happening right now in terms of alerts? Is it just a problem that it's a lot of it's in text and it's just in English?
Yeah, you were going right down that path. The the situation we have, and obviously I'll speak a little bit more to the United States because of the EAS system in the United States, the primary alerts are done in English. That's it. That's the kind of the native thing. It's done in English. Even if it's a Spanish station, worst case scenario is it could be a Spanish radio station. You're going to get the alerts in English, and that's not very good for that audience.
No.
Yeah. So in the same context, you would have, you know, English text information on a Spanish channel. You know, so if you're looking at a video display and all of the programming, all the advertisement, everything else is all in Spanish, you know, you've got your target market. All of a sudden, I pop up an emergency information, which emergency managers are really seeking to communicate to as many people as they possibly can. I want you to get this information out. It needs to disseminate to as many people as possible. And so if you just typically look at the normal things, there's no sign, there's no icon. You're going to get an English text crawl. You're going to get English audio over a Spanish station. That's not very good in really trying to communicate what's going on or and to whom they can really discern that information and take action on it. You know, the idea of this alerting is to be able to know whether you need to take action or what and what type of action you need to take. Typically, that's described in these alerts. That's kind of an important situation. So the idea is if we can take this stuff forward and people start to adopt this VIDS idea or this visual information display symbology, that's how we've coined the term VIDS, to kind of represent and do a better job of leveraging the stuff we've already vetted out. We've vetted out the icons. We've done the colors. We've done a lot of other things. It doesn't mean people couldn't modify that if they wanted to. If there's something that they want to, you know, present slightly differently, perhaps for a station, ID type thing. But it's really to help bring this together, bring this symbol that is universal. There's no language issue with presenting the symbol, and therefore it can be more easily discerned by people that don't have, you know, that native language skill or you know, A, may not be able to read the text, may have visual impairment about reading it, or don't have the language skills because it's done only in one particular language.
Mm-hmm. And I assume it's important to have everybody on the same page in terms of the symbology used, because if you have five ways of showing a condition, you're just causing people to look at it twice and go, okay, what does this mean?
Exactly. And that's why, again, what we did is we didn't invent them. It wasn't an idea. In fact, we loathed the idea of trying to build graphic symbols because a lot of this stuff was already done. It's, can we leverage them? And by leveraging the stuff that's already out there, and doing a little bit of improvement in what we think is by, you know, adding the double underline so you can differentiate the elevation of the alert. Because again, the symbols could be the same in a flash flood and a watch, which isn't as meaningful or impactful if it was a flash flood warning. That's kind of the next step up. So that actually, by the way, ties back into the group. So group one is the event codes or the event information is displayed with the symbol. The group two is the symbol only to persist for those really important alerts. Mm-hmm. And then we go into group three, which has a yellow color, again, focusing on what we should do for cautions or warnings and types of thing. It uses a single underline under the symbol, again, to differentiate it so we know where we are with the symbol, and represent that in terms of, hey, this is something of importance. It's not as critical as a red alert, but you've got a yellow alert. So again, that color coding we think is important. There's blue that we do with some symbols. Most of the blues are done as informational types of things. Again, it's not a critical life limb property type of event, but it's something that's informational. Again, school closings or, you know, a road closure someplace because of some kind of construction thing or accident even, as it may be. And then the final one, our group five, is a green background, no underline under the symbol. And that's really, again, a level of information, but they're typically for tests. So this is, you know, just you could, in essence, ignore it. Don't worry, green, everything's okay. We're fine. It's just up there to help say, okay, I can't read the text, but I understand this is just a simple message. No action necessary.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company's Greenfeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So I'm a end user with a digital signage network of some kind, let's say on a university campus, or I'm a digital signage software vendor or a subscription content service as well. How do I use this? How do I plug into it? What are the implications of operating it?
Well, we've had a couple of companies already implement VIDS in their character generation devices. One of our partner companies in Envisa has done this. And we actually have some examples of what this looks like, which I can send you the YouTube video links, and I think would be very nice. Because again, when people see it, it in a classic sense, you know, a picture tells 1,000 words. And so they can see it and they get a better understanding of what these different types of things look like. But for the content providers, and especially the digital signage network, we would love to see them adopt this similar thing. Now, there's a couple of things around it. Again, the symbols are there. We have them available in JPEG and SVG format, so they can grab the symbols. We've got the table already built for what event codes they're associated with. So we've done a lot of the groundwork. All we need is more people to, you know, to kind of grab, you know, gather the information that we've already provided and adopt it into their product. The one thing that they will need in that environment, and we've seen a lot more of this, and this is kind of coming from my work, let me say my day job at Digital Alert Systems, is we build the devices that listen for the event codes, that listen for the emergency managers. And even in some respects, the emergency managers use our equipment to generate the alerts that go out over the air, over the internet. And when we receive those, we can pass that information into the signage systems, into the character generators, into those things. So in other words, for the most part, they're doing their normal thing. They're showing and displaying the content that is already set up for that sign. If it's a map in a mall, if it's a menu, you know, in a restaurant type of thing, whatever it may be, they're doing their normal work. We can send them a message over IP that just says, hey, if this unit, if this display is in this location, given some geo coordinates about where it might be, then here is the alert that you're currently under. And Dave, part of the stuff that I look at around this is there's an idea that in college campuses and facilities, enterprise facilities that have a lot of signage around in their particular campus areas and buildings, they live in what I call a hyper bubble. So it's a hyper local bubble. They're sitting here and they get information and they exchange it inside the building or inside the campus. There's not a lot of recognition of events that might be going outside that could impact them. Again, there's a lot more of these, and we've been doing a lot of work on, again, in my day job about facility managers and other things about adopting this type of technology. Because if I'm in that environment, and what's really good is these signage elements have a great way to communicate. And I mean, it's fast. It's a great way to communicate. You can get in very impactful messages. And when I say impactful there, I'm talking about, again, just because I get an alert, what I want to do is know, okay, I'm under an alert, but what should I do? You know, if it's a gas leak, is it chlorine gas or is it natural gas? What should I do? You know, those things all come into play about information that you can exchange about this. Plume maps, there's a whole range of different things. If we can then pierce that hyper-local bubble and bring in information. So, for example, a campus is, you know, part of a city, part of a county, part of a state. And there may be events that are happening across that entire environment that they need to know what to do. And if we can bring that information in and transfer it into those signage components, and it's in a form that is, you know, not only well known or is going to hopefully become more well known in the typical broadcast community and cable casting community, then these people will recognize, ah, okay, I see it. I've got an alert information and I can display it.
So that's using an interim box of some kind that's sniffing for all that stuff. What happens right now if I'm in a jurisdiction where there's an amber alert, or if there is some other kind of public safety alert that's pushed out to smartphones and to broadcasters and so on, are they also using some sort of an interim device, or is it just sniffing like a data cell or getting something triggered out to it that causes a message to pop?
Well, there's a couple of different things, because in the United States and Canada, United States has what's called FEMA, obviously the Federal Emergency Management Agency, but they have a server that is called IPAWS. It stands for Integrated Public Alert Warning System, IPAWS. And it uses a technology that's called CAP, Common Alert Protocol. Again, we're talking about government, so there's going to be acronyms. Yep. This is acronym soup. There's a similar type of thing that is run by a private company in Canada, Pelmarex, and that entire methodology of alerts go through those kinds of clearinghouses. So in other words, in some respects, now the important thing too is not every alert goes into those servers. So, in a local thing where let's go to, some Teton County, for example, and I want to generate an alert, it might just go out over the air, and it never, the sheriff there generates the alert, goes out over the air, it never goes and sees IPAWS. So you can have some local ones, and if you're not watching for those, you may miss them. But there is this idea of these integrated servers. Again, the Pelmarex system in Canada, IPAWS in the United States. The problem is those devices or those servers serve a ton of information because there's a lot of agencies that are on them. What you need to do is to act correctly. And so at every television station, every radio station, every cable head in, there is this intermediate box that its job is to listen and monitor those things. And it's also set up with a set of filters. So it's looking, saying, okay, I've got all of this information, but is it important to me? Number one, does it rise to the level that I've set that, I'm not going to get every alert and broadcast it. Then you end up with a really bad situation of just constantly crying wolf and no one pays attention to it. So the idea is to have a device, an intermediate device that monitors these feeds, and it says, okay, is it for my area? Does it rise to the occasion that I need to pay attention to it? And if it does, I basically need to decode that and turn it into text and audio, because many times, for example, the ones in Canada, they don't come with audio. We actually use a text-to-speech engine to create that and cause it to create the audio for the particular message. So the nice thing about that is that capability, that idea of having this intermediate device is to monitor, to look, and to format it so that the downstream devices, the character generators, the digital signage content, everything, only have to react to what we say is important, because you preset it for what values you want. And it has all of the information necessary for that. Okay, here's the text, here's the audio, play this, represent it this way.
Okay. So in a lot of circumstances in the digital signage world, I would say 80-90% of the networks that are out there are running as software as a service. So the end users may be using a service that is used by hundreds of other companies. Does the central digital signage software CMS company need to have one listening device for all of its networks, or one for each of its networks, or how would that technically work?
There's a couple different ways to do it. And it's not dissimilar to the way that a lot of cable and even some broadcast companies that have done central casting. So they've got remote locations, transmitters set up in one city, but they're actually being fed content from another remote city. Depending on the level of engagement. And the reason I say that level of engagement is in the United States, the FCC says that you have very specific standards. In other words, there's a requirement that says you must monitor off-air signals and you must monitor the FEMA IPAWS feed. Again, that's under the purvey of the FCC, for example, or in Canada, the you know equivalent situation where you are required to do that. In a an area that is it's not a requirement, you can kind of phase yourself into that. And that way, if the central the CMS system has the capability of discerning, okay, if I send it five areas, and in Canada there are SGCs or special geographic codes. In the United States, it's they're called FIPS codes, very similar to zip code, so that you've got an area that is defined. If I send 10 different area codes, let's just use that as the idea. If I send 10 different area codes that the CMS, the Digital Signage Content Management System, is able to say, ah, this is an alert for this area code, and I can send the alert information only to those received points. So if I have the capability of breaking up my content or the alert going into those received points, then you can do it in a central point because I can assimilate back to that central point. I can send information out, and it's a great way to do it. It really is going to be dependent on kind of the design topology and how much addressability that CMS provides for different locations.
Right. All right. So if I'm an end user or a digital signage solutions provider of some kind, I've read about this, I've listened to this podcast, and they're interested, what do they do?
Well, one thing that it's, they could do right now is they can download the VIDS document, the recommended practices, from the NVISA website. That's www.nvisa, I'll spell it out phonetically, Nancy Victor Indigo Sierra Alpha, and .org. So if you go to the nvisa.org website, you can download this recommended practices and the symbology. Once they take a look at that and kind of understand what we're talking about in the context of the symbols and things like that, we can make available the symbol set. We've got that available for them, and we can talk to them more about specifics on integration and then some of the other companies that they could talk to about how they would be able to assimilate that information, get it into their displays. You know, where does the information come from? How is it received? What protocols are used and that kind of stuff? So we can take them through a number of different things, but I really would encourage them to take a look at our recommended practices. One of the things that about this too that we did in the practice document is made sure that it wasn't based on things like scan lines or pixels, but really is a ratio. It's a relationship, because if it's a let's say a 16:9 display, I'll use that. Or if we rotate it for a vertical presentation where it's 9:16 or something else, we want to be able to have the icons and these text types of elements in the same relative position. So that, again, if it's a smaller screen, I'm not giving you, you know, fixed sizes for the number of pixels. There's a ratio of banner height to symbol height. And that's kind of an important distinction too, so that we can be very flexible in whatever format the display might be.
All right. That was terrific. Very, very interesting stuff. Thank you so much for spending some time with me, Bill.
Dave, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, if they just visit the www.nvisa.org website, take a look at the documentation, give us a shout. Let us know if we can help.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16:9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16:9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16:9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16:9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16:9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.